Senate will come to order.
You know what? Any hammers on that mic? So.
Chief Clerk, call roll.
Roll call for Monday, January 31st. Barnard?
Here.
Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case? Christensen,
here.
Coe,
here.
Cooper,
here.
Dockstader,
here.
Driscoll,
here.
Amrick,
here.
Esquibel,
here.
Geis,
here.
Hastert,
here.
Hicks,
here.
Hines,
here.
Jennings,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Landon,
here.
Martin,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Nutting,
here.
Perkins, Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Schiffer,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Flatern,
here.
President Anderson.
Here.
30 present.
Prayer by Reverend Gilbert.
Senate staff, senators, Mr. President, thank you for the invitation to be your chaplain for the week. If you feel that I can provide services other than a prayer in the morning, please give me a call. Let us unite our hearts and minds in prayer. God of infinite wisdom and universal compassion, we would be persons wise of mind, truthful in words, and beneficial in actions. We would be our individual best, and that is why collectively we address you in prayer. We know we are wiser together than we are alone, so grant us the willingness and the ability to listen to and to learn from one another. People in all places and in different religions open their lives to the knowledge and power derived from the divine. So at the commencement of this week and the beginning of this day, we open our hearts and minds to you with a request that you will enable us to be our best, to attain the highest good, and to do the noblest deeds. And it is to you, Almighty God, we will eternally be grateful. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January the 28th, 2011, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Are there any objections? There being none, that report is adopted. Our doctor for the day is Dr. Brandon Fitzsimmons, M.D. from Basin. Thank you, doctor, and welcome to the Senate. Nurse for the day is Ann Davin, Wyoming Medical Center in Casper. On this day in Wyoming history in 1917, the Indian paintbrush was adopted as the state flower. On this day in U.S. history, in 1940, the very first monthly Social Security check was issued by the U.S. government. The check numbered 1 was in the amount of $22.54. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, may I have the privilege of the floor for
you,
an announcement?
You may.
Mr. President, this morning your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, had posted Senate File 145, Medicaid Fraud Recovery. We did not get to that bill because the licensure bills ahead of it took too much time, but I discovered after the meeting that there were some out-of-town experts that showed up to speak to 145 that we didn't get to, so there will be an informal meeting of the committee at noon. We won't take any action, but we will, for any members that can attend, we will hear from those people who will not be able to be with us on Wednesday.
Thank you, Senator Scott. House bills on first reading. House Bill 19, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 119, Assignment of Retired Circuit Court Judges, an act relating to circuit court judges, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, passed the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
That is House Bill 19. House Bill 19 has been signed to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 21, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 21, Battery Against a Family Member, an act relating to crimes and offenses, sponsored by Representative Barbuto, passed the House on third reading, ayes 55, noes 3, excused 2.
House Bill 21 has been signed to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 23, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 23, Sex Offender Registration Amendments, and Act Relating to Sex Offender Registration and Notification, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, passed the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 55, noes 1, excused 4.
House Bill 23 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 28, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 28, Child Protection, Shelter, Care, and Initial Hearings, an act relating to children, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, passed the House on the third reading in an amended form, ayes 50, noes 9, excused 1.
House Bill 28 has been referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 30, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 30, Execution of Judgment Liens, an act relating to judgment liens, sponsored by Representative Gingery, passed the House on third reading, ayes 56, excused 4.
House Bill 30 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 40, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 40, Compensation for Persons Exonerated Based on DNA, and Act Relating to Criminal Procedure, sponsored by the Judiciary. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 51, noes 8, excused 1.
House Bill 40 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 62, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 62, Wyoming Controlled Substances Act Amendments, an act relating to the Wyoming Controlled Substance Act, sponsored by Representative Gingery, passed the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 55, noes 4, excused 1.
House Bill 62 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 75, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill Number 75, Victim Notification Amendments, an act relating to criminal procedure, sponsored by Representative Ken Escobel. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 75 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 80, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 80, Service of Process in Family Violence and Stalking Cases, sponsored by Representative Davidson. An act relating to the service of process. Pass the House, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 80 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 95, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 95, Involuntary Commitment Examiners, an act relating to hospitalization of mentally ill persons, sponsored by Representative Harvey. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2.
House Bill 95 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 88, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 88, Guides and Outfitters, an act relating to the Guides and Outfitters and the Wyoming Board of Outfitters, sponsored by Representative McComey. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2.
House Bill 88 has been referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 29, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 29, DUI elimination of right to refuse test, an act relating to driving under the influence, sponsored by Representative Gingery. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 35, noes 23, excused 2.
House Bill 29 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 157, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 157, abolish of worthier title doctrine. Abolition of worthier title doctrine, an act relating to property conveyance, sponsored by Representative Brown. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 54, noes 2, excused 4.
House Bill 157 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 158, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 158, rule against perpetuities. An act relating to property, sponsored by Representative Brown. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 54, noes 2, excused 4.
House Bill 158 has been referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 159, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 159, Uniform Trust Codes Amendment, an act relating to the Uniform Trust Code, sponsored by Representative Brown. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 55, noes 1, excused 4.
House Bill 159 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Joint Resolution 1, first reading of the House Joint Resolution.
House Joint Resolution 1, District Court Commissioners' Authority, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution to expand the authority of District Court Commissioners, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 44, noes 15, excused 1.
House Joint Resolution Number 1 has been referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 5, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 5, University Revenue Bond Supplemental Coverage, an act relating to the University of Wyoming, sponsored by the Capital Finance Appropriations Committee. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 55, noes 1, excused 4.
House Bill 5 has been referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. House Bill 13, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 13, Hathaway Success Curriculum 2, an act relating to education, sponsored by the Education Committee. Pass the House on third reading in an amended form. Ayes 52, noes 7, excused 1.
House Bill 13 has been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 27, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 27, school year required contact hours, an act relating to education, sponsored by Representative Gingery. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 40, noes 18, excused 2.
House Bill 27, first reading of the House bill.
That's one.
House Bill 27 has been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 52, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 52, Charter School Restrictions, an act relating to education, sponsored by Representative Wallace. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 50, noes 6, excused 4.
House Bill 52 has been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 72, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 72, Teacher Merit Pay, an act relating to education, sponsored by Representative Madden, passed the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 56, noes 3, excused 1.
House Bill 72 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education, House Bill 86, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 86, Compulsory School Attendance, and Act Relating to Compulsory School Attendance, sponsored by Representative Prokers. Pass the House, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 86 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education, House Bill 115, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 115, Charter Schools Application, an Act Relating to Charter Schools, sponsored by Representative Teeters. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 55, noes 1, excused 4.
House Bill 115 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education, House Bill 63, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 63, Subdivisions, Water Study, an Act Relating to Subdivision, sponsored by Representative Madden. Passed the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 56, excused 4.
House Bill 63 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. House Bill 124, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 124, National Guard, Emergency Deployment Professional Licensing, and Act Relating to the Military, sponsored by the Transportation Committee. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 56, excused 4.
House Bill 124 has been referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House Bill 50, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 50, Health Insurance Exchanges, an Act Relating to the Administration of Government and the 2010 Federal Health Care Reform, sponsored by the Labor Committee. Pass the House on third reading. Ayes 48, no 8, excused 4.
House Bill 50 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. House Bill 87, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 87, Obsolete Laws, General Revisions, an Act Relating to the General Revision of Laws, sponsored by the Management Council. Pass the House on third reading, ayes 57, excused 3.
House Bill 87 is referred to Committee Number 12, Rules. Reports from standing committees.
January the 31st, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Mineral Business and Economic Development, to whom was referred Senate File 143, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. I, Senators Bebout, Cole, Cooper, Jennings, and Rofsus, Senator Cooper, Vice Chairman. January the 31st, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 137, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman. January the 31st, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 1, Judiciary, to whom was referred Senate File 138, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Perkins, Senator Perkins, Chairman. January the 28th, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 114, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Myers, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Fladern, no, Senator Hastert, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. January the 21st, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred Senate File 95, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, Hastert, Martin, Nicholas, and Ross. Senator Anderson, Chairman.
Bill's on second reading. Yes, Senator Cooper.
Mr. President, Senate File 143, which just read in, has an appropriation in it. I'd like to have that re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Request being a Senate File 143 be re-referred to Committee Number 2. Seeing no objection, that's so ordered. Senator Dockstetter.
Mr. President, if this be appropriate this time, could I have privilege of the floor?
Certainly.
Take a moment, members of the Senate, to honor one of your former members, former member of TRW and former member of this body, Senator Delane Roberts, if we take a moment to acknowledge him.
Welcome back, Senator Roberts, and if you'd like a moment to address the body, we'd certainly extend the privilege. You can use Senator Cooper's mic if you like.
You know, I'm very grateful to you. A lot of good friends and associates while I was here in the Senate. I really appreciate it. I'm still involved with the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust, and what a great piece of legislation that was. And we're moving forward. We can see the results that are coming now from the trust, and we're very grateful for the support that you've given us, and we hope that that will continue. We always get many more applications than we have money for, but as we progress, we've seen some very, very helpful things for wildlife. You know, I spent a minute there and talking to a woman who just came out of the motel in Jackson, and she was getting in the car. She had two small children, and I asked her if she had been to Old Faithful and what they had seen at Yellowstone. And right now, she told me how many antelope they'd seen, how many bears they'd seen, but she didn't say anything about Old Faithful or any of the rest of it. So that's what's important to me and to the board is wildlife, and trust that that'll be important to you folks. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator Roberts, it must be all that wildlife that keeps you looking so young. Bill's on second reading. Senate File 50, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 50, Medicaid Option Study, sponsored by the Labor Committee.
There are no amendments. Senate File 50, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 89, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 89, Adult Protective Services, sponsored by Senator Ross.
There are no amendments. Senate File 89, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 94, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 94, Liability for Emergency Equipment Donation, sponsored by Senator Johnson.
There are no amendments. Senate File 94, having been read two separate times, this question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 102, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 102, Medicaid Cost Study, sponsored by the Labor Committee.
There are no amendments. Senate File 102, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 109, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 109, State Parks Temporary Peace Officers, sponsored by Senator Meyer.
There are no amendments. Senate File 109 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 124, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 124, Overweight and Oversized Vehicle Penalties, sponsored by Senator Escobel.
There is an amendment. It's the Hicks Amendment. I would ask that the reading clerk read in second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 124 at this time.
Senate File 124, second reading amendment number 1, page 2 after line 9, insert.
Senator Hicks, would you like to move and address that amendment at this time?
Mr. Chairman, if you will allow me to move this amendment, and I would ask for a favorable consideration of the Committee of the Whole when they rise and report on this amendment. I will tell you this was a very high debate over in my district over the weekend. I was contacted by numerous people, and I would like to speak to this. First, I'd like to say thanks to the committee for bringing this, because this is absolutely something that needed to be done. I think we all recognize that we need to hold everybody accountable that is working outside the range of the laws of the state of Wyoming. But I also think that there may have been some slight oversight by the committee. And it deals with the weight issue, not on the top end. I heard good support for this with my constituents that are involved in the trucking industry. What this basically does is for that 0 to 1,000 pounds sets up that you just get a warning. And I would equate this to the equivalent of a speeding fine. But I don't think we want to go down the road where if you're going 1 mile an hour over the speed limit, that we as a state are going to take punitive actions against those individuals that are out there doing due diligence trying to comply with the law. What I would tell you is that what this amendment does is it allows a 1% variation in what the total legal weight limit on these particular trucks on the highway does. And let me tell you what some of the concerns of my constituents were this weekend. Some of these trucks will hold 300 gallons of fuel. About 8 pounds a gallon. That's 2,400 pounds. So you can weigh off at a scales, pull into a scales, be perfectly legal, go down and top your truck off, and you're going to break the law. 2,400 pounds of fuel alone. I heard my constituents talking about going across scales, weighing out, being perfectly legal, going through a port, and then they can't pass a port because they've been in an ice and slush storm and they've accumulated 2 to 3 pounds of ice on the truck. So they got to shovel these off. But in the case that they get pulled over by YDOT, they're just going to get fined when they were perfectly legal to start with. In our area, we have a lot of commerce that comes off of county roads and secondary roads that are covered, that are gravel and dirt roads. And they'll pick up a piece of equipment that they know the exact weight on that equipment, load it on their truck, go down 15 miles of dirt road after it's rained and snowed and been muddy, hit the highway, and they will exceed the limit. So what the intent of this is not to take punitive action against people that are doing everything in their honest ability to comply with the law. We're just trying to provide a little bit of discretionary leeway here and basically say if you're in compliance, you're only exceeded in a small amount, you're going to get a warning. And this is what this does, is try not to enforce a punitive action against people that are trying to comply with the laws of the state of Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, with that, I would sit and take any questions.
Okay. Before we vote on the amendment, Senator Hicks, I believe that you may have inadvertently moved this as a committee of the whole amendment, and when in fact it is a second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 124. I think that was the intent of your motion.
And that's correct, Mr. President. Thank you for that correction.
Okay, and with that, I would ask all those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. I believe this amendment has passed second reading. Seeing no further amendments, Senate File 124, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall a bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 128, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 128, Abandoned Vehicle Storage Expenses, an act relating to abandoned vehicles, sponsored by Senator Hines.
Senate File 128, there are no amendments. Having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate Joint Resolution 2, second reading of the Senate Joint Resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 2, Health Care Freedom, sponsored by Senator Nutting.
There is an amendment, a number of amendments, or maybe, let me look here.
Just one.
There's just one amendment. This is the Perkins Amendment. I would ask a reading clerk to read in first amendment, second reading amendment number 1 to Senate Joint 2.
Senate Joint Resolution 2, second reading amendment number 1, page 1, lines through 8.
Senator Perkins, would you like to move this amendment and talk and discuss it at this time, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move the second reading amendment number 1 to Senate Joint Resolution 2 and ask the body for favorable consideration. With your leave, Mr. President, I'll go ahead and explain the amendment.
Go ahead, Senator Perkins.
Thank you. What we've got here is the other day where we left off, if you remember, is we had cleaned off the good senator from KC. We had come up with a short amendment, mostly dealt with access, cleaned off all the other issues, so we left now with a very short resolution in regard to health care. And in this, and the problem is that I don't think that access really, that the problem is really in this, in the amendment and the intent of the person who started this bill, this joint resolution, was that it deal with access. What we're really talking about is choice and freedom of choice. And so what this amendment does before you is it went back and we tried to look at and find some language that might be more appropriate for a constitutional amendment, and I'm coming back to you with five sentences that constitute four paragraphs. And the way this would work, so if you can visualize, if you were to go down, this would clean off all of the previous amendments, so this would be the amendment. It would not be anything else but what's in this document, with a few exceptions. The first exception was, if you go to on page 1, line 27, and look at right there, this would be an Article 7, Section 24, Right of Free Choice in Health Care. That would be the title where this would go on the Constitution, and then these paragraphs would be the actual health care amendment. And there's four paragraphs. First one is, each competent adult shall have the right to make his or own her health care decisions. The parent, guardian, or legal representative of any other natural person shall have the right to make health care decisions for that person. And that's what this is about, my fellow senators, I think, is about choice, about whether you're going to free to choose it, whether you're free not to choose it. And so we're just having that broad statement in there. The second one is, also dealing with an important part, is any person may pay, this is in paragraph B, any person may pay and a health care provider may accept direct payment for health care without imposition of penalties or fines for doing so. You have the right to choose it. Your health care provider needs to be able to provide that and be able to receive payment for it without being fined or threatened or otherwise compelled to say no to you so that your health care has meaning. The third sentence, the legislature may determine reasonable and necessary restrictions on the rights granted under this section to protect the health and general welfare of the people and accomplish the purposes set forth in the Wyoming Constitution. Obviously, we can't have unrestricted health care choices. There are certain procedures. There is a practice of medicine without a license, the practice of any other number of health care provider services that have to be licensed. They have to be able to protect, and the legislature needs to be able to protect our citizens and our people against unlawful practice of medicine or other types of health care. In addition, there may be certain procedures that are just harmful, and we don't allow those in our state. And so the legislature needs to be able to have reasonable, necessary restrictions on those rights. As far as the other purposes set forth in the Constitution, we have to care for those who can't care for themselves. We have state hospitals. We have workers' compensation. We have other constitutional obligations where we have to provide health care and in some cases compel people to pay health care or to be or participate in a health care system, such as workers' comp, or at the state hospital, or some of the other state institutions that we have. Also, prisoner care for others that's in within the care custody, such as prisoners in jails or in prisons. They have health care issues that the state needs to provide to take care for. So I think that C is broad enough that it enables us to take care of that. And the last sentence is simply, the state of Wyoming shall act to preserve these rights from undue governmental infringement. We all recognize that it can't be completely unregulated. There has to be some government. We're still going to have Medicaid. Medicare is not going to go anywhere. Medicaid is not going to go anywhere for a time. So there's going to be some governmental intrusion and infringement on these rights, and that's going to have to be accepted. Where the money comes, there are also strings attached. And so ultimately, what we need to protect against is that undue infringement. So ultimately, what I've got there is a simple statement that I think gets at the essence of what the bringer of the amendment originally believed. The only other change then would be is to the sentence, which is at the bottom of page 2, lines 28. There, and basically the language here would simply be, the adoption of this amendment will preserve the right of all persons to make their own health care decisions, and then it would just say it permits any person to pay, and then you see what the, so that's the ballot statement that would go there with that introduction. Other than that, that's what the amendment is. I urge your favorable consideration because I think it gets to the heart of issues, which is health care choices, not access, but health care choices for the people of the state of Wyoming. And thank you, and I'll stand for questions, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Mr. President, I've been thinking about this one ever since I saw on Friday an initial draft of this amendment, which I don't know is identical, but certainly very similar to what was offered here. And, Mr. President, I will say that it's something I very much like, that it makes a good deal of sense to me. And so I have a couple of questions, just because I want to make sure that we're getting it right here. Mr. President, we can't give an unrestricted right to make healthcare decisions. We've learned by hard experience there's some limitations we have to put on that right. You have to have the ability to have professional licensure in the days before there was. Frankly, there were some snake oil salesmen that called themselves doctors when they weren't and preyed on the public. And in those days, medicine couldn't do as much as it could now, so those guys didn't do as much additional harm as they would now, but you need the ability to deal with that sort of thing. You need the ability sometimes to compel care. For example, right now, Mr. President, if you get a drug-resistant tuberculosis, you are a danger to everybody around you. You'll get quarantined. You'll have to undergo treatment. We don't do that very often. It's a rare condition, but you have to do that. Otherwise, you run the risk of creating a major killer again. And tuberculosis, which used to be known as consumption, was what many, many people 100 years ago died from. You have to be able to control that sort of thing. We've decided certain vaccinations have to be mandatory. If they aren't, you're putting at risk everybody that's not vaccinated, including some people who, for one or another medical reason, cannot be vaccinated. So we've done that. There's quite a laundry list. The amendment seeks to deal with that by saying, in point C, the legislature may determine reasonable and necessary restrictions. I think that's a very skillful way to deal with that, but I'm looking for, are the courts likely to interpret that in some ways we'd rather they didn't, that will get us in trouble? And specifically where you say health and general welfare for other people and accomplish the purposes set forth in the Wyoming Constitution. So you've got to meet both tests. Health and general welfare, Mr. President, I think I understand. Purposes set forth in the Wyoming Constitution. Workers' comp would clearly fall under that. But what else is there? And are they likely to take those two and say, well, you've got to accomplish both, And yes, what you're trying to do protects the health and general welfare, but there's no specific purpose in the Wyoming Constitution that it falls under. Are we at risk there? And I'm looking for an unintended consequence. I'm wondering if on third reading we should substitute an or for the and. Mr. President, I think this is a very good approach to this problem. I'm just asking the Senate to look it over carefully and make sure that we put it in the Constitution, there aren't any unintended consequences.
President, Mr. President, I too have been thinking about this over the weekend and reviewing the language, have some general concerns. And I'm not sure that I have the answers, but I think it's an important thing that needs to be fully debated before we change our Constitution. Mr. President, the way I read this language, subparagraph A, 28 through 31, create a new constitutional fundamental right. So if you think in terms of the Constitution, these are the fundamental rights which the courts will first say that you have. So if you have a fundamental right to go to school, the Constitution says you have a right to education, then that's the primary base upon which everything else is built. That's the language. Now we say each competent adult shall have the right to make his own health care decisions. So by giving that fundamental right, that's the unrestricted right. Now there is paragraph C we'll talk to in a moment. And then it goes on to say if you're not competent or if you're a child, somebody else can make that decision. Now, the legislature in subparagraph C can make reasonable, necessary restrictions only if it's to protect the general health and welfare of the people and to accomplish the purposes. No, it's not the general welfare of the person. The individual here has an individual right to choose his own health care, and that cannot be abridged by the legislature or affected until and unless there is a finding that it's the general welfare of the people. So let me ask some questions. Suppose the issue is the person's right to reproductive options. That's a health care decision. And it seems to me that a competent adult under this should have that right. Now, I suppose we can then get in the business of the legislature coming and deciding of the general welfare of the people to accomplish it, that we could give restrictions. Imagine what our legislation is going to begin to look like as we create these exceptions, saying, well, you don't have the chance, you don't have the opportunity in the first trimester or the second trimester, and we're going to start regulating that here because otherwise the choice remains to the individual. Assisted suicide, whether you call it assisted suicide or not, that's a health care decision. Now, under this act, I have a fundamental right to make my own health care decision. So the premise is, it's my right. So unless the legislature somehow determines that it's in the general welfare of people to accomplish those purposes, that's my basic right until the legislature comes in and says, no, we're not going to give you that right. If I choose to have shots or not, immunizations or not, that's my first choice. Now think about the next sentence, even more interesting. If you're, let's take a person who is either disabled or a child, the parent, guardian, or legal representative now gets to make those health care decisions. That's a constitutional right. So as a parent, I'd have a constitutional right to demand that my child go through some special procedure or choose not to go to a procedure. Suppose he needs a transplant. I think I just don't want him to go through a transplant process. I don't think the likelihood of success is great enough, nor do I want to spend the money on it, so I'm going to make the decision for my child that he's not going to have the transplant procedure. And that's my constitutional right. And now what you're going to have is a new legal guardian have to come in and point it to take the rights away from the parent. How does that work? And how are you going to begin to go through the process as a legislature of finding out all of these instances under the where the Constitution is wrong? and we're not going to give you those fundamental rights. You know, I think we started down this path because of a federal act that was trying to impose on people an obligation to purchase insurance employers, which we had a fundamental disgust to, and I think a lot of us feel that way. There are some who feel differently. And I submit to you, this doesn't even get to that issue. But I do believe that it creates a lot of issues that you really have to begin to wonder on second reading whether or not this is an appropriate constitutional amendment with a new guarantee. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator Schiffer. Mr. President, I think it bears a couple things in this bear a little bit of noteworthiness. First of all, understand what the bill, as it stands today, prior to this amendment, says: the right to health care access, as defined by the legislature, is reserved to the citizens of the state of Wyoming. And that falls in Article 1, Section 38, the rights of our citizens. We're saying this is a fundamental right. We can elaborate with statute. We can do a carve-outs, and there's a couple more carve-outs in here. Make sure you want them in your Constitution, because they're going to be there forever. We can't modify them with statutory language. Can't bring a Senate file. But most of all, this transfers this constitutional amendment under the heading of health and morals. The old one about temperance, that's where it ends up now. It's out of Article 1, Section 38. It's gone from there. It's not a right of the citizen. It's back in Article 7 now. If that's where you want it, under morals and temperance and those kind of things, think about that. I urge you to do so. We will never get all the carve-outs that have to be there. You just heard of another one today. I urge you, members of the Senate, vote down this amendment, leave the language simple, make it a right we grant to our citizens. We can work on programs, or we can work on taking care of the Affordable Health Care Act, or we can take care of all those other issues in statutory language. But leave the Constitution so people know exactly what they're getting under Article 1. They have the right to choose their health care. Leave it simple. They'll understand it. We'll understand it. And we can make statutory changes as need be. I urge you to vote no on this amendment.
Mr. President, this amendment returns us back to the original intent that reflects the requests that have been made from so many of our constituents. It speaks again to freedom of choice without penalties. It respects public safety, and it speaks against over-government infringement. The length is appropriate to other amendments in our Constitution, so we've accomplished the length question, and the language is consistent with other language in the Constitution. That is, it's eloquent and easy to read and meaningful to the citizens of our state.
Mr. President, in terms of unintended consequences, I was just wondering if someone might be able to answer the question as to how something of the following nature that I'm going to describe might be addressed. For example, we can now donate our blood, and we can be compensated for our blood. In fact, there's some advertisements in the Casper Star that'll even give you a coupon for $50 reimbursement for selling your blood. Today, we can donate a kidney, or we can donate organs, and that's considered very admirable, and it is. But if we can donate, why can we not sell an organ? And, of course, today we can. That's a felony. So you can donate, but you can't sell. With this amendment, on a constitutional amendment. I was just wondering how an issue like that might be addressed in the future. Thank you, Mr. President.
Other comments or questions before
I'd like to speak in favor of this.
Thank you.
I'd like to speak in favor of this amendment. I think it's important to note that our Constitution is there to protect our people, and this amendment really fills in a hole of what's potentially coming at us from the federal government and will continue to come. It strengthens, not weakens, our rights, and it's very appropriate in the wording and the way it fits within. I would urge support.
Thank you. Other commentary?
Thank you, Mr. President. One of the key differences that I see, Mr. President, in this amendment versus the draft that is currently in second reading is that the draft in second reading is trying to reserve the rights to the citizens of the state of Wyoming. So it's not only trying to protect the people from the federal government, but from the state as well. The revision that we're looking at right now adds a bunch of additional language to make sure that if the legislature, if the state feels that the state wants to administer a bunch of details or ways that the rights are restricted, that the state is somehow allowed to do that. So as I see this amendment, it actually goes in the exact opposite of what the people in the last election were voting for. It gives authority, instead of the federal level, to the state level, where perhaps the state government could come up with a mandate because it was in the interest of the people, and perhaps force everyone to obey that mandate because, again, the legislature has determined that that's in the interest of the people. And we're kind of back to where we started, but instead of it being the federal government that's telling us what to do, it's simply the state government telling what the people should do based on what the state thinks is best for the individuals. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Senator Scott, for your second time.
Mr. President, yes, it's for my second time. Mr. President, I think I've achieved the objective I had when I stood up the first time of having us take a careful look at this because it is constitutional, and we have to consider what we're putting in the Constitution very carefully. Mr. President, I'm going to vote for this amendment. It's replacing the amendment we put on in Committee of the Whole, which says the right to health care access as defined by the legislature is reserved to the citizens. Mr. President, when we said as defined by the legislature, frankly, I think we went a step too far and made the whole constitutional amendment just a feel-good. This does something more than that. And what we're seeking to do with these constitutional amendments is to put some outer limits on where we're going to go with health care reform. We're going to be dealing with health care reform, I don't know for how long. It's, I think, going to be a major topic next 10 or 20 years. I don't think we've by any means seen the final word on it, either nationally or here in the state. And some of the push for having a constitutional amendment to say there's some outer limits on what we'll do. And I think that enabling people to make their own health care decisions so that you don't have you can't get the health care you really need because the government has decided it's not going to be allowed. That's something we're trying to put a stop to. I think this amendment does. I do have some concerns still that we may have some unintended consequences here, may need to modify the language a bit on third reading. But, Mr. President, I hope on second reading we'll adopt this amendment.
Senator Weedout, first time.
Now, thank you, Mr. President. I wasn't going to get involved in this, but as I listened to the debate and I took out our Constitution and I looked at Article 1, and if you read Article 1 and look through some of the things that it contains, all 37 of them, they're rights of the citizens of Wyoming. And One that reached out and grabbed me was Section 24 of the Right to Bear Arms. It's a pretty simple statement. It says, the right of citizens to bear arms in defense of themselves and of the state shall not be denied. And I looked at the language that we have in front of us now that was adopted in Committee of the Whole. To me, that's a simple statement. It really represents what we want to tell the people of Wyoming, the rights we give them. I look at the language that's proposed. Some of the arguments made are good arguments. You could argue all day long about this, whereas a simple version is something that I think we really should afford the citizens the right to vote on and do. Then if you go to Article 7 and look at it, education, state institutions, promotion of health and morals, public buildings. I'm just having trouble seeing health care reform in Article 7. And so really, based on that reason, I think we should defeat this amendment. Let's keep the language simpler. If there's a better way to do it, maybe we could do it on third reading. I tried to come up with some language. You'll see in the second reading amendment that they deleted my amendment. The amendment never showed up because I couldn't figure out how to write it to really make it simple, yet try to get to the points. Let's defeat this amendment. Let's keep the language simple and move this bill forward, or this resolution forward.
Other questions or commentary on this before the question? I think sponsors would like to take this final step.
Because your right is not the right to access. Your right is the right to choose. And if you want to move it to Article 1, move it to Article 1 and take another right to one. That's a great thing. My name is
which would include workers' comp, and that's exactly what's in there. Workers' comp, a balanced budget, other things that come into the health care issue, because as we all know, with the cost increasing, the ability to have a balanced budget in the future is going to be become more difficult and more difficult. So that's why we have those other purposes of the Constitution in there, recognizing that it's not in a silo. It's all encompassing. We've got to, it can't be just decided that we get health care choice no matter what the cost, because we know we can't afford that. And so vote it up or vote it down, but I'll tell you that I will not vote in favor of an amendment that only grants access as the legislature determines it, because I don't see that as a constitutional right at all. Thank you.
Thank you. Ready for the question? Question is in regard to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate Joint Resolution number 2. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has passed. Division. Division being called, all those in favor of this amendment, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. That amendment has passed second reading. We are now back on the Senate joint resolution. Any further discussion? Seeing none. Senate joint resolution number 2, having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business for considerations of bills on general file. I'm sorry, bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Mr. President.
Go ahead, Senator.
We do have a third reading consent list. It is as follows. Senate File 2, State Treasurer Report. Senate File 25, Long-Term Services and Support. Senate File 48, Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Account Board. Senate File 62, Large Project Funding. Senate File 79, Recreation Safety Act, Waiver on Behalf of Minors. Senate File 110, School Facilities Commission Reorganization. Senate File 115, DUI, Child Endangerment Fines. And Senate File 120, Workforce Services and Employment Reorganization.
Would anyone like any of these bills removed? Senator Jennings.
Senate File 62, Mr. President.
Senate File 62 has been removed. Senator Meyer has removed Senate File 25. Any other bills to be removed from the consent list? Senate File 2, Senate File 48, Senate File 79, Senate File 110, Senate File 115, Senate File 120. Having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geist?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting? Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. Senate File 2, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 2, 30 ayes. Senate File 48, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 48, 30 ayes. Senate File 79, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 79, 30 ayes. Senate File 110, are there any changes?
Scott, no.
Scott, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 110, 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 115, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 115, 30 ayes. Senate File 120, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 120. 29 ayes, 1 no.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 2, Senate File 48, Senate File 79, Senate File 110, Senate File 115, and Senate File 120 have passed the Senate. Other bills on third reading. Senate File 25, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 25, Long-Term Services and Support, and Act Relating to the Wyoming Long-Term Care Choices Act, sponsored by Senator Martin, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Meyer, did you wish to speak to this bill?
Yes, Mr. President. The reason I call it, ask the bill to come off is I do have some concerns, and but I wanted to get some information on the handout that came out on this bill, and I think most of the folks who have it, or if you still have it, has to do with the Senate File 25. And we've got a chart there with people with developmental disabilities and ages, and then you've got the home and community-based services, and that's as determined by the Department of Health. And I'm wondering if the developmental disabilities part of it, or even the aging part of it, if any of those are Medicaid waivers that have to have increased in funding take advantage of the gains or the opportunities of that might occur. And that I'd like to have that cleared up a little bit. And I still have some concerns about some of the areas where we're already providing some of these services and the duplication of efforts. And frankly, I'm kind of amazed that the Department of Health doesn't do this within their budget at this current point in time. They're a big department. They should be able to have the outreach programs already developed. The 211 lines are already developed. All of that, I think, should actually be able to be obtained just merely by directing them to do it rather than starting a whole new government program. And so I have a little bit of concern that this is something that we haven't already done, and without having to start another program that's going to eventually balloon into $2 or $3 million a year. So those are some concerns that I have. But to get back to whether or not these cost savings are going to occur in the absence of more money directed in community-based waivers, I'd like to have that answered directly.
Other questions or comments before the sponsor arrives? Senator Martin, would you like to address some of these issues?
Thank you, Mr. President. The bill doesn't indicate that there would be an expansion of the waivers. It would... The numbers are actually dealing with the present numbers, and I had just seen this information, but I can tell you that the division has provided some numbers utilizing the provider that's presently doing something like the ADRC would be doing, and looking at the number of calls and unduplicated calls. Somewhere around 2,500 calls, and as you calculate that down and start looking at a very conservative figure, ultimately the assisted living facility is a Medicaid program. The long-term care waiver is a Medicaid program. Yet the community-based in-home services is a state-funded program. The annual, The annual lower level of care cost per client for assisted living is $13,733. The long-term care waiver, $12,762. And community-based in-home services is $1,700. The, as you look at, talk about a savings to the state and a savings to Medicaid, of course, nursing homes, there's actually zero savings, but, you know, nursing homes is part of that long-term continuum of care. But if the total annual savings to the state, if one person in each county is appropriately placed in lower level of care, the assisted living facility, the savings would be annually for $489,417, projected savings. The long-term care waiver, $523,250. And the community-based in-home services, $7,676. I know that most people have probably made up their mind concerning this piece of legislation, but overall, I think that when you have a proposed program that you can look at these potential savings, I think it's worth for this body to support this legislation and move it through, and then allow for the report. The initial report is in October of 2011, and then there will be another report annually. We do control the purse strings. It does not mean that this have to expand out of what we feel a comfort zone. But I think that we need to give it a chance. We need to look at ways to save Medicaid dollars. We need to look at ways to save dollars altogether. The Appropriations Committee chose to reduce the funding, and which I have no problem with that. I think that that was appropriate, especially when we can come back and look at this. We know that we want to expand this across the state, but the provider feels that figure is fair, and it allows us to move forward. And like I said, we'll be back in the budget session next year. And if we have issues with this program at that time, then we can take that up. But we do control the purse strings, and I ask for your support on Senate File 25.
Senator Nicholas.
President, I think folks, with respect to the argument, and if you look at the charts that have been handed out to suggest that by growing another portion of government that somehow you'll save money by steering people away from institutions into lower-cost care, I'd just be cautious when you think that that's the case. There are a whole number of protections that we have, mandates that we have to ensure that people, particularly those with disabilities, are not institutionalized inappropriately. And nobody's going to disagree that there is both expensive and less expensive care. And I guess you have to at some point decide whether or not you think that by growing another group of people, employing more people to go out and educate folks, one is that education is not otherwise available. People can't sort it out without hiring more state employees or, in this instance, hiring or contracting with people to provide services. And if you find that compelling, fair enough. But I'd suggest to you that there are a lot of services out there and people in government that are perfectly capable and, in fact, are providing this services. And it's not as though you go to the Lander facility and you see a whole bunch of people that don't belong there that, if provided proper counseling, wouldn't be there. We have all sorts of mechanisms in place to prevent those things from happening. Oftentimes, it is a lot of information to take if you find a loved one that's a family member that finds himself having to shift care. Nobody denies that, but my experience is that people do figure it out. And it does take time to research, and that's what people do.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, I do find the argument compelling. And the reason I find it compelling is partly my experience over the years with my family, that you can get an instance. If you have an elderly family member, and I'm particularly thinking the elderly, but I think it applies to the person with developmental disability as well. But you have an elderly family member who deteriorates gradually, where you can see the time coming when you're going to have to do something else. There are, Mr. President, quite a few resources you can draw on. You can go around, talk to the other institutions in the community. You can talk to people that are getting the various services in their homes. You can figure out a way to make things work. And in those circumstances, an ADRC would be a useful resource, but not essential, Mr. President. The trouble is that a good part of the time you don't have that gradual deterioration. It comes suddenly. An elderly person has a fall. An elderly person you think is just fine in assisted living gets kicked out because they think they're getting a little too severe, whether they really are or not. Elderly person has some kind of a disease. They're in the hospital, and the discharge planner says, we got to figure something out in 24 hours because we can't keep them any longer due to the way that Medicare pays for things now. Then you really need the ADRC that has had the experience, that has had the time to develop what the options are, because you no longer have the time. And on these things, I think they really will pay. First, they'll pay in getting some of our citizens in settings that are a good deal less restrictive, Mr. President, where their quality of life will be a good deal better. And second, they will pay in state dollars, because I can tell you that nursing homes are a lot more expensive. Now, I've unfortunately had to spend a fair amount of time in nursing homes recently, and most of the patients there are so severe, they need to be in a nursing home or some similar institution. But that's not universally true. There are some who could be elsewhere. And a key to that is having the family members with the knowledge of what resources can we put together so these people can continue to remain in their own homes or some other option is a good deal less restrictive. I think this will pay, because I don't think the current system is adequate to deal with the crisis circumstance.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll be brief. We've labored this long enough, but acknowledging the point that perhaps it comes rather fast, siblings and myself, we had a situation where we figured it out in less than 24 hours. We addressed it as a family. We took care of it as a family. You might categorize this one and put it in the file that government's here to help. I think we can figure this out on our own with our own families and our friends and those in our communities.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, I would like the sponsor of the bill to respond to my concern that this bill sets up a bureaucracy that to me seems to be an anachronism to the 21st century and the information age. This is a resource center. This is where you go to get information about a particular subject. And in the information age, we already have facilities all over the state that are perfectly capable of this, senior centers. If money was distributed to them on a bid basis, to provide this information, I think many of them, most of them, would be more than willing to do that. And the idea of setting up a government bureaucracy, to me, seems like one of these programs whereby 3 years from now, if we're looking to streamline our system, these are exactly the centers we'd be going after to cut down and to outsource those information centers themselves. And so to me, the idea of setting them up now just seems to be opposite of the direction we want to be going.
Are there other questions before the sponsor of the bill would rise to answer the previous question on his second time? I think that actual Senator Christensen rose first. Senator Christensen. Go ahead, Senator.
Mr. President, thank you. Speaking from personal experience and one who's very skeptical about government being the answer in so many different ways, I had an experience where I saw a group, a bunch of individual nonprofits, efforts, government services, and everybody had good intentions. Everyone was working toward helping their customers. And an idea person came forward and said, we need a coordinator. And they took it on themselves. And over a couple of years, I went from being skeptical to just increasing one more organization to seeing the benefit of that and how it really did make a difference. And that was just in a community, not thinking of the distance that separates our communities in this state. And what the other thing it did was it allowed those individual organizations to focus on their primary mission as opposed to trying to be connection and creating connection points with other organizations. And they were able to be more efficient, come back to it, and the duplication of efforts was reduced. And I think it really made a big difference in that community. When I look at the organizations that are on the advisory council, just to drive the point home a little bit, I think we have the Cheyenne Regional Center, the Geriatric Education Center, DFS, Wyoming Independent Living, the Wyoming Hospital Association, Primary Care Association, the Veterans. And that last one really, when I talked about the veterans, as I was sitting here, I thought about, if you look at a military machine, you have all kinds of specialties, all kinds of trained people. It takes someone to coordinate and bring those resources together in an effective machine that then accomplishes goals. And I see this as doing that, and I'd urge your support.
Thank you. Other commentary before us? Seeing none, Senator Martin is second time, and some questions there.
Mr. Chairman, the good senator from the Sheridan area brings up a good point. But what has really happened and does happen is each area is very protective of what they do. What the ADRC does is it tailors information that goes to the client to meet their needs. Instead of going to six or eight different agencies and trying to determine that, it just lays that out information out, what is available to them, and allows them to make that decision, then allows the counselor to help them fill out the paperwork and help them start through the process of being able to move into those areas that they would like to be. In most instances, of course, they want to stay in their home, but sometimes that's not always possible. But at least they'll have the accurate information and allows them to make that determination, or allows a loved one or a physician or a friend to help them make that determination, because sometimes they may not be capable of understanding what's taking place. The comment from the good senator from Star Valley, when he and I discuss this, he has the ability, or his family had the ability, to do that. What happens when you have a loved one, whether it be a mother, father, living here, and you live in a different state? How do you actually try to circuit through or navigate the process when you don't even live here, don't even know how to deal with it? And ADRC allows for that one-stop shop, allows a place where those folks can go and work with their loved one who may have problems and needs to go into assisted living or into a community-based in-home service program to
get that information and make that determination. I think that in some instances, when you talk to some of the other folks that have indicated, if there's somebody out there doing this or they should be doing this, it's not happening. Because the reports I've had is they've had to go to six or eight different agencies to try to find an answer. And some of those places they went to are the ones that we're talking about that's supposed to be providing this. Well, it's not truly happening in the manner that we would want it to do with this legislation. Thank you, Mr. President.
Ready for the question? Senate File 25, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall a bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
No.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert? Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
No.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 17 ayes, 13 noes.
Senate File 25, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 35 has passed the Senate. Senate File 25. Senate File 25 has passed the Senate. Senate File 62, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 62, large project funding, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resources Funding Act, sponsored by the Natural Resource Funding Committee, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Jennings, did you wish to speak to this Senate File 62?
Yes, Mr. President. Thank you. I had a question posed by a constituent at a late date in this bill, and I hope I gave my old chairman time to answer it because I didn't know how to. But the question was, is when you have these easements, some of the easements actually get the minerals pledged to them in the easement. But an easement that did not have the minerals pledged to them, once the person that gets the money for the easement, and they have it in a bank or spend it or what they do with it, and you have the mineral asset come in and for some reason or other they want to exercise their primacy because that mineral asset wasn't pledged with the easement, what my constituent question was, is there supposed to be some kind of an IRS penalty? And did that penalty against the surface easement, conservation easement, put the state in any liability? And I hope I did give my former chairman enough time to come up with the answer.
Senator Burns, would you like to respond, please?
Yes, Mr. President, and I thank the good senator for giving me lead time on the question, because otherwise I would have stood up and gone, huh? Mr. Chairman, the question is actually, the answer to the question is actually twofold. On the matters of easements, oil and gas are considered a temporary disturbance and generally do not interfere with the easement itself. Mining is a whole different situation, and the language is addressed, first the issue, and then the language is addressed in the easement language with the person who is either donating or selling the easement. It is generally advised, for instance, that if there's any plans to have a gravel quarry or something like that, to leave that outside the easement. As to the tax question,
And I'll just read the answer. Purely from the perspective of the Internal Revenue Code and Treasury regulations is this. If the landowner claimed no penalty income tax deduction for the grant of the easement, there is no possibility of a tax penalty. In other words, if they sold the easement. Two, if the landowner claimed a deduction for the easement, the IRS may, within 3 years of the date on which the taxpayer last claimed a deduction for the easement, disallow the deduction in whole or in part. Three, the landowner claimed a deduction for the easement and the development occurs after the 3 years statute of limitations on its deduction has passed, the IRS may require the landowner to report as income some or all of the tax savings realized from the deduction under the tax benefit rules of Section 111 of the Internal Revenue Code. However, this would be very unusual use of this section of the code, one not reported to date. I hope that answers the good senator's question. There is no chance that this would come back on the state in any way.
Any other question being called? Senate File 62. Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks, conflict?
Conflict.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson? Landon, Martin, Meyer, Nicholas, Nutting, Perkins, Peterson, Ross, Rothfuss, Schiffer, Scott, Von Flatern, President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 2 noes, 1 conflict.
Senate File 62, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 62 has passed the Senate. Senate File 73, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 73, Municipal Solid Waste Landfills. And Act Relating to Environmental Quality, sponsored by the Minerals Committee, be it enacted by the Legislature of the State of Wyoming.
Senate File 73, there is an amendment. That is the Meyer Amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read in that amendment at this time.
Senate File 73, third reading amendment number 1, page 10, line 11.
Senator Meyer, would you like to move this amendment and speak to the third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 73, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 73 and ask for the body's favorable recommendation. Mr. President, on committee of the whole, I did mention that I would be coming back to this particular area here. I apologize for coming back to it on third reading. I just frankly didn't have the time to do it justice before second reading. Mr. President, on page 10, this goes into the definition section and after applying inserts only. So it would read specific definitions applying only to solid waste management. Mr. President, I think this part of the amendment is important from the standpoint of the unintended consequences if these particular definitions on groundwater, aquifer, and credible data may be transported outside of this section and used in other areas of the law, specifically in Title 41 in our water statutes. Mr. President, I do go in and make a couple of changes in the definition of groundwater. The original or the amended version basically said groundwater means any water under the surface of the land. Mr. President, I had felt that that because we're dealing with solid waste management, that what happens in the case where you have a landfill and the water flows, as it says in the subsection, and flows underneath a water body, a lake, a stream, or a reservoir, and at that point in time, after that had flown from beneath the landfill underneath the water body, then would this particular section mean that it no longer applied as far as regulation? And I thought that might have been an unintended consequence if we didn't have the broader definition of groundwater, and so I brought that broader definition in. This is actually the definition of underground water in Title 41, so it's not new words, but it's words transported in from 41 with a retitling of groundwater rather than underground water. Mr. President, I kept the area that was stands, and that was very important from the standpoint of the sponsors and the committee chairman's good senator from Fremont County, where he wanted to make sure that if you had perched water, and perched water is water that does not flow or percolate or get out of the aquifer or move, then it's not that big of a concern, and so you should be able to define that and kept that in there, Mr. President, and also kept in the section at Section B. I did remove the areas in there where we were talking about saturated zone rock or soil. It looked like that was almost going into the pore space definition in which we had a year or so ago. And I wasn't sure how this language might interfere with that. Maybe I was looking at things that went bump in the night, but I wanted to make sure that we didn't preclude a right that we had given surface owners because we did say that we had the right as a surface owner to fill that pore space with any substance. So I wanted to make sure that we weren't infringing on that right in the solid waste statutes. With that explanation, I stand for any questions, Mr. President, and ask for your favorable consideration.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. And, Mr. President, the whole purpose in this Senate File 73 for the definition section is to be sure that we finally do have interstatute some definition of not only groundwater but aquifer. And the only use that we had prior to this was the DEQ was in their rules, so they really had no definitions in our statutes to be able to look at, and so I thought it was a good idea to do it. It clearly is in Title 35, and it clearly is under the solid waste. I think that the second line of the amendment to put the word only in is fine. I also talked to the state engineer under Title 41, still understanding that this is under solid waste, not Title 1, but he felt a little more comfortable with the definition, and it really does paraphrase what we use in Title 41, other than we insert the word groundwater instead of underground water. I think this definition will probably work for what we're trying to accomplish, and I would ask the Senate to support it.
Other commentary, questions? Seeing none, the question before us is in regard to third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 73. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We are back on the bill. There are no further amendments. Are you ready for the question? Senate File 73, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Von Flatern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 30 ayes.
Senate File 73, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 73 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a motion for us?
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into committee of the whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. Senator Meyer, would you like to come forward, please?
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first file for consideration is Senate File 85. Would the reading clerk please read the file?
Turn that on. Senate File 85, Game and Fish Violation Penalties, an act relating to game and fish, sponsored by Senator Burns. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Dockstader, Driscoll, and Escobel. No, Senator Christensen. Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 85. There are no standing committee amendments, and, Mr. Chairman, since it's my bill, I will further explain it. Mr. Chairman, currently, under current law, if somebody poaches any big game, either shoots it without a license or commits wanton destruction or hunts out of season, right now they can get hit with a misdemeanor up to $10,000 and 1 year in prison. Mr. Chairman, if they are caught doing it a second time, they can be hit with a misdemeanor, $10,000 fine, 1 year in prison. If they are caught for the sixth time, they can be hit with a high misdemeanor, $10,000, 1 year in prison. Mr. Chairman, there are problem poachers in the state of Wyoming who have been caught repeatedly, and they consider it worth it. There is a handout. I brought this bill at the request of the Game Wardens Association because there is a problem out there. And, Mr. Chairman, if you look at the handout that are on your desk, on page 2, you see a very nice ram's head sitting on a park bench. My understanding is that those go for between $30,000 and $50,000. It is well worth the risk on the part of these people who have been caught before to do it. So, Mr. Chairman, what this bill does is on the second or subsequent conviction, it simply makes it a penalty. The fine goes, it's still $5,000 to $10,000, but the imprisonment can go up to 10 years. And that's both for wanton destruction and for taking game animals without a license or closed season. Mr. Chairman, it's that simple. Mr. Chairman, anytime you've got a game and fish bill, there are a lot of emotions and a lot of strong feelings on the issue. And one of the arguments pointed out for not passing this bill, because it has been up before this body before, is 236208, which allows for the forfeiture of devices and equipment used in taking game illegally. And, Mr. Chairman, I would point out that in that, if that equipment and devices is worth over $1,000, it has to be done at the order of a judge. It cannot be done administratively by Game and Fish. And, Mr. Chairman, the bill's simple, and I would welcome any comments or questions.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I rise in support of this bill, but I do have a question of its sponsor. If you would look at the title under 23-3102, it says taking certain game animals without a license or during a closed season. And then if you'll flip the page to page 2, line 2, that language changes and it says without the proper license. And the question I have for the sponsor is under that scenario, there's a difference between hunting without a license or without the proper license. And I guess the question is, if you had a parent hunting with a 14-year-old and they had a hunting license, but a lot of these units are divided by maybe a creek is just a few feet wide or a BLM road, or in some cases they're just a hydrological divide. They're the top of a peak. But under this scenario, if I had a youth that was hunting with me or with a person and they shot an animal on the wrong side of the line, would they be subject to $5,000? Because under this language it says without the proper license. And I guess that's a question for the sponsor.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, the senator is asking a question on in statute that already exists. And the idea behind that was not the accidental shooting over a particular line, a creek line or something. It is if somebody has, let's say, a general elk license or a cow permit for an elk license, but and just suddenly sees a nice big bull and shoots that nice big bull, that is taking, he has a license, but he doesn't have the proper license for it. Or he has a deer license and ends up shooting an elk or a bear. He's got a license, but not the proper license.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that what, either for or against the bill, but one of the things that we're doing here that we need to be aware of is we're remedying this problem with this habitual poacher by the fact of making it a felony. We also take his guns away from him. So he can't have a gun anymore. And maybe that's the right punishment if he can't go out there and use it responsibly.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along those same lines with my fellow senator from Natrona County, I commend the intention of the bill. I just had a question for the sponsor with regard to the utilization of imprisonment, which is already an option. Just curious whether or not our judges out there are utilizing what we've already given them, which is the opportunity to take these knuckleheads off the street for at least a year. And then I just had the same cautionary thought, which is, you know, my other good friend from the Toronto County reminds us all the time, we tend to do a lot of this lately. We make things felonies, and then we have other discussions on other related topics. So just in that regard, curious about the imprisonment on these fines.
Senator Burns.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I would remind the body that I was the one who brought the bill to allow expungement of felonies, so I'm not very big on the proliferation of them. Keep in mind that the felony portion, the felony threshold, is not for the first time you've done this. If somebody mistakenly shoots a cow elk thinking it was, or let's say shoots a moose thinking it was a cow elk in the silhouette or something like that, more often than not, if they go to Game and Fish and they explain what happened, Game and Fish is generally reasonable about that sort of thing. We're talking about where it was intentional and wanton. And it's after the first time. The first time, it's still just a misdemeanor. These are the guys who know what they're doing and insist on doing it and consider the risk to be worth it, consider the reward that they're getting to be worth it.
Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, the examples and the information that we talked about in committee and that I know from my past profession are horrendous, and they hit you right in the guts. And they go right to what people in this state hold dear, and that's our wildlife and especially the sportsmen who seek out the trophies and the folks who rely on them for subsistence or meals. My concern with this bill, though, is that it takes two misdemeanors and turns them into a felony. Earlier we had a lot of discussion about those the weight of a felony. Now, in this case, because a weapon would be involved, there's no opportunity after a number of years for any kind of a return. The focus being on those worst-case offenders, there's another side to this, and it may be that teenager who sat around hunting camp and listened to his dad and his granddad talk about the old days when they filled the freezer, and that teenager goes out and for whatever misguided reason, or that kid over at UW, and shoots two antelope. The language that this bill proposes said they shall be charged with a felony. When we think about the difference between a person who may make their living from trophy poaching and marketing on the international market as opposed to that kid who listened to stories of days gone by and then in a moment of severe foolishness reenacts those, it's a youthful indiscretion, there's a huge difference. But this language really takes a hard line and focuses on that most extreme offender when the majority of the people who could qualify for this or could, you know, step up to this statute as it's worded are not that kind of a person, and I'd urge our caution.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, following that same line of reasoning, it seems to me we've heard of a number of other ways to increase the sanctions, maybe to limit this to the people who are doing it for marketing reasons or who are really serial offenders, not just the second offense. I would urge the Senate to look for some other ways we can stiffen the penalty here that we can, if not get rid of the felony in this, restrict it a good deal further so we don't catch the people who are misguided, because there are so many sanctions with felony that are well beyond the time in prison and the effect, and they reach so far. At some point, we're going to have to do something, Mr. Chairman, about our tendency to just proliferate felonies. And if we don't find some other reasonable options, I'm going to suggest that maybe third reading on this bill would be a good place to start drawing the line on our felony proliferation habits.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, good senator from Casper and senator from far, far away. I am one who really, really have a hard time with felonies, and this is one case that I think that they're critical that you have them. This is the one case for those repeat offenders. You look at that sheet picture. These are guys that listen to nothing. They lose their pickup in a crime. They lose their right to hunt for decades, and they're back. And there's only one way to get people like that, and that's to take away their right to hold a gun. And this is one place, it's one of the very few you'll either ever hear me stand up and say, we ought to hit them with a felony. And I've got to believe county attorneys and judges are going to look at youthful indiscretions. We had a good visit with a senator far, far away, and they're going to say this isn't the right place for this, and that charge isn't going to get filed. The kid that's out having a bad weekend, it's just not going to happen. That's what our local authorities are for, and they do a great job of doing that. So I'd really encourage you to do the felony thing. You can even put those guys in jail, but then they can't pay their fines, and they can't take care of their wife or their family. And, you know, you can take their guns away from them, they can't hunt, and you just gave them a penalty that's probably worse than a year in jail. I'd really encourage you to do it. These egregious offenses are terrible.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, I get a little disoriented when you're saying, okay, we're going to dig our heels in, we're going to draw the line, and then you say on what the proliferation of felonies are. And here, the guys we're talking about are bad actors. These are people who are doing this intentionally. On the handout, I direct you to page 2. And take a look at the list of states in which this is a felony. And I will note the states that surround us. Idaho, felony, up to $50,000 and 5 years in jail. Montana, $50,000, 5 years in jail. South Dakota, $4,000, 2 years in jail. They're all felonies.
If you are a poaching trophy hunter, and you're looking around, and you're looking around at the penalties, and you're looking around at your ratio of reward to punishment, where do you think your finger is going to end up going? You're going to look at the place that has the most wildlife and the least penalties. Why, in Wyoming, you could get caught six times. It's still not a felony. It's still only a misdemeanor. I remember some years back, before I was even in this legislature, part of the argument on the fact that we had a 19-year-old drinking age versus the 21 was that we were a pathway to people underage to come to Wyoming to drink. Well, we've actually paved the way for these chronic poachers to come to Wyoming because they don't want to get nailed with a felony elsewhere. Because here, it's just a misdemeanor no matter how many times you get caught. Now, Mr. Chairman, due respect to the concern about proliferation of felonies, and if somebody wanted to change it to, let's say, a third time caught is a felony, that would make sense to me. But the idea of it not being a felony, I think all the intention is there to commit the crime on the part of a number of these people. And the fact that you may have somebody who had a youthful indiscretion or something like that, you know, quite often common sense steps in there.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the committee in the whole rise to report that I do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 85, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 85 has passed committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Leader Ross.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee of the whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
For the motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Are there any announcements? Senator Scott?
Mr. President, again, for those members of Committee 10 who can attend, we're going to meet informally in the committee room in about 5 minutes to hear from some witnesses on the Medicaid fraud bill that was posted for this morning, some people who cannot come back to our regular meeting on Wednesday.
Senator Cooper?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet 15 minutes after the noon recess up here in the North Skybox, S18, to take up Senate File 121, Performance-Based Evaluation and Design. That's a continuation. House Bill 111, Engrossed Public Works and Contracts 2. House Bill 113, Wyoming Pipeline Authority, and House Bill 109, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, Committee Number 3, Revenue, will meet tomorrow, February 1st, 15 minutes after the noon recess to take up Senate File 129, Agriculture Land Subdivisions, and House Bill 60, Taxation of Oil and Gas Field Services.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in S19, top of the stairs, to take up and finish Senate File 113, which has been continued over. That's Surveyors and Engineers Practice Act revisions. Then we're going to dig into Senate File 147, Service of Process Fees, and Senate File 150, Notaries.
Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 6, Travel, will be meeting tomorrow, Tuesday, 8 o'clock in the morning, room S14, to take on file Senate File 80, Game and Fish Complementary Licenses. This is a continuation from January 27th. Senate File 151, Grizzly Bear Season. Senate File 142, Boxing Commissioner. House Bill 100, Game and Fish Land Acquisition. House Bill 76, Gross Game and Fish Turkey Pioneer Licenses.
Other announcements? You've heard the motion. All those favors say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion carries. The Senate shall stand recess until 2 p.m. this afternoon.